Hello, it is Wednesday, October 21st, 2015. This is Debbie reading the Herald and Review from the heraldreview.com website. Getting started with news. College president announces retirement. This is by the Herald and Review staff. Richland Community College President Gail Saunders announced in a letter to college employees this morning that she is retiring effective sometime in the spring semester. Saunders, who has served at the college for 15 years this month, said in the letter, "A formal announcement will be made later today. To everything, there's a season and there's a time for every purpose in life. Every orchestra maestro knows when her last masterpiece of music has been creatively mastered and performed. It is time for me to pass the baton to the next best leader for Richland Community College. With much reflection and thought, my husband And with much reflection and thought, my husband Rich and I have decided to spend more time in a warmer climate, nourish our passions to give to our growing family and cherished grandchildren, and take what time we have left to enjoy retirement years together," Saunders wrote. She went on to chronicle many of the accomplishments Richland has achieved under her leadership. "There is much for me to speak proudly about regarding the nature of Richland and the comprehensive fulfillment of well-being through growth, progress, and fulfillment of dreams held by others throughout the community. Highlights of the year included the opening of new spaces and programs identified in the Workforce Development Center project, a campaign to imagine the next level of excellence for Richland through the Carroll School of Business, securing partnerships and dual credit opportunities with the district's many high schools, and awarding more than 1,000 scholarships to students so they can afford college, just to name a few. The recent high of a community who was electrified by the success of the 10th year anniversary Farm Progress Show allows me prideful reflection on how the college has grown, thrived, and prospered through my years as president. And yet there is always more to do and more to dream and create. Some dreams take a long time to realize, but the Student Success Center will be the new heart of Richland Community College when it opens sometime in 2016," she wrote. Her letter concluded, "With that said, I know that Richland Community College is poised to take the next steps that will only serve to strengthen educational opportunities for students and its service to our communities. Each of you play a crucial role in the student pipeline, and the success of Richland's graduates speak volumes to your abilities to deliver excellence at every step in the student's journey. As leaders before me have described, the college has been my hope, and faculty, staff, and students my family. I know that as Richland continues to realize its fullest potential, you will continue to support the next president and all that future holds. My retirement announcement will be made today by Board Chairman Bruce Campbell and myself, with a date identified later for some time in the spring 2016 semester." End of that article. Next. Mount Zion Police get workable space. This is by Ryan Voiles of the Herald and Review staff. Mount Zion, Adam Skundberg, let's try that again. Adam Skundberg, 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 and other officers laugh when they think of how things used to be in the Mount Zion Police Department offices. Even with crammed offices that had to be shared with fellow officers, as well as a lone interview room and a lone restroom to be used by all staff, Skundberg, the Mount Zion police chief, said they never complained because they never knew what things could be instead. After several years of renovations, Skundberg and his staff have learned how much better things can be. Renovations of the police department offices are nearing completion. The decades-old building at 400 West Main Street has been a bank, a grocery store, a library, and until 4 years ago, the shared space of the department and village operations. Village Administrator Julie Miller said as the village grew, the shared space became a restriction on both parties. So when the village operations moved into a new 28,000 square foot facility at the end of East Village Parkway nearly 4 years ago, it came time to fully commit to making the old building something special. The remodeling includes additional office space, interview rooms, training room, and an expanded lobby. As he walks through the facility, Skundberg is aware how each of the new spaces has made things more convenient for his office. The lobby is more open and welcoming, while the new interview rooms make it easier for officers than in the past. Before, we would sometimes have to put a person in any empty office we had, set up the tripod and interviewing equipment before we could talk to them, Skundberg said. Now it's all set up and ready to go right away. The overall space of the facility is 7,600 square feet, 60% larger than before the remodeling. The overall cost of the remodeling was $74,789, which Miller said was budgeted over a two-year span. Some employees, such as Sue Zervowski, are blunt when they think about how things are compared to the past. You remember being what it was like before the people being elbow to elbow because it was so cramped, said Zervowski, the dispatch and record clerk. Well, he has heard from some residents who were curious as to why the village chose to remodel the building rather than build a new place for the police department. Skundberg points to the location of the department on Main Street and its proximity to the schools as the perks to staying in the same location. It's a perfect location here, he said. When school's getting out, we're off the busiest stretch of road in the village. Expansion also opens up the possibility for future growth in the 10-person department. As Miller said, it was impossible to increase the department staff in the previously small space. As the village continues to grow, Skundberg said, additional personnel may be needed and the building can be further remodeled vertically or horizontally if necessary, he said. But for now, Skundberg said he and his officers are happy to have a bit more space in which to do their work. We really think we have a good thing right now, he said. We really think this will help benefit the entire community. End of the article. Another featured article here is Barbers Give the Kindest Cuts of All. That being in quotes, kindest cuts of all. This is by Teresa Churchill, also. She's a senior writer for Herald and Review. Decatur. Sporting a fresh fade because of freak haircut day, Cameron Sleet had trouble keeping his hands off his head, even while playing pool. Every time I touch it, it feels like I ain't got hair, he said. The 8-year-old was grinning while he said it. However, a sign the annual event at the Boys and Girls Club at Decatur was having its intended effect Tuesday on male participants. You feel like you can do anything when you have a new haircut, said Kara Williams, the club's program director. This is about building up confidence. A spa day with free hairstyles, makeup, and fingernail painting was offered to girls earlier this month, and Williams hopes to make each event a quarterly occurrence. Next time, we're taking the boys to Futures Barber College, she said. Sean Allen, owner of Competitive Edge Barbershop, has been providing free haircuts at the club ever since Bruce Jeffrey, now executive director, was hired as the club's program director in 2008. Why does Allen do it? The kids, he replied. It's always good to give back to the community and the kids. On Tuesday, Allen brought with him Mike T. Thomas, also of Competitive Edge, Courtney Slaughter of Creating the Man Barbershop, and Jerry Cole of Elevations. The quartet of barbers intended to give more than 24 haircuts during the 3-hour event. Tournaments and basketball, game systems, and pool were also part of the Tuesday's fun. 9-year-old Keondes Britton said he was pleased with the geometric touch Slaughter created in the hair on the left side of his head. I like the design, he said. Jamal Mays, 13, said he was glad to get some attention from Cole's razor because his hair was more than an inch on top and way longer than he likes. My hair is messed up, he said. Thomas predicted most of the boys would probably ask for a short get-up-and-go style. Some guys want to style their own hair, but a low cut is easier to manage, he said. End of that article. Also featured, Spooky Crafts Taught in Class by Allison Petty for the Herald and Review, as you know. Decatur, the spirit of Halloween came early and cutely to Johns Hill Center on Monday. 6 preschool-aged children traced their hands on orange construction paper to make hair for a witch they assembled and decorated. Then they affixed bandages, masking tape, to mummies cut from black construction paper and played a game that required walking the lines of a spider web. After all that work, they were rewarded with a cup of candy corn and a juice box cleverly disguised as a ghost. The activities are geared toward helping the children with assistance from a parent or other adult develop motor and socialization skills, said Danita Diefenbach, recreation supervisor for the Decatur Park District. I always try to encourage waiting our turn and sharing, she said. I think those things, Those are things that if they learned early, then once they get to school, they already have those down. This fall, the Park District began offering the classes for preschool-aged children on a one-time basis, rather than having parents pay $30 for a six-week session. Some parents found these commitments were too difficult, Diefenbach said. Now, each class costs $5 for residents or $7 for non-residents. Parents who let Diefenbach know of a conflict ahead of time can get a refund or a transfer their registration to a different class, she said. Monday's session of Calendar Kids was a hit with friends Nora Panganiban, 2.5, and Adelaide Winnick, 3. Nora already told mom Jennifer Panganiban that she wanted to come back again, and since she's an only child, Panganiban is always looking for good opportunities for Nora to be around other kids. This is a great one, she said. It's so reasonable a cost for everything they're doing. Adelaide has siblings of varying ages, including baby brother Atticus, who slept quietly during the class. It's just kind of nice to do something for her at her age group, said mom Beth Winnick. To find out more about the Park District's preschool activities, you can go visit their website at decaturparks.org or call the Decatur Indoor Sports Center at 429-3472. End of that article. In government and politics, we have the editor's pick for this website today. Council won't tip hand on Aldi. Decatur. Months of uncertainty about the potential location of a new Aldi store on the city's north side will come to a head Monday with a Decatur City Council vote. Neighbors of the site at the intersection of West Ash Avenue and U.S. Business 51 have passionately opposed rezoning that would allow the development, citing concerns about traffic safety, property values, and quality of life. This is also by Allison Petty. Developers say the Aldi would be a good neighbor with the store designed to prevent cars from stacking up as they try to enter. The site is desirable because of its high traffic count and visibility, and failure to secure it could send the new store to Forsyth. That would mean a loss of sales tax dollars at a time when city coffers face strain from several sources, including years of flat or declining revenues and uncertainty at the state level. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said the decision would be a very difficult one for the council, which will meet in the Decatur Civic Center Theater to accommodate what is expected to be a large crowd. I'm not going to commit at this point, Moore Wolf said. I want to hear from the neighbors. I want to hear from the company's representative. I want everybody to understand what we potentially lose, because I don't know how you make that up. Under the plan, Aldi would close its store on Pershing Road and attempt to sell that building. At 18,000 square feet, the new store would be roughly 3,000 square feet larger. Customers would enter and exit off of West Ash, where a left turn lane would be added. About 12 trucks each week would make deliveries through an entrance on West Oak Lane. The owners of 5 homes at a vacant lot on the property have reportedly agreed to sell. If rezoning is not approved, Aldi's Director of Real Estate, Mike Rosh, said the company would look elsewhere along U.S. Business 51, somewhere between Target and Menards. Ed Flynn, a local attorney representing the developers, has said that Forsyth officials have expressed interest. A survey of the council members last week found the majority waiting to take a position. Councilman Jerry Dawson and Pat McDaniel were the exceptions, with both opposed to the rezoning. McDaniel made his feelings known in a news release. He said the rezoning would contradict the council's previous pledge to protect city neighborhoods. As a member of the Decatur City Council, it is my responsibility to promote and foster further responsible community economic development growth, he said, but it is also my responsibility to protect the quality of life and public safety elements within our community that Decatur residents count on. Dawson, who used to live in the neighborhood, said he received tons of emails and phone calls from people urging him to vote against the rezoning. He said he told them he would be willing to throw the neighborhood under the bus if the proposed project were a larger one, something that could generate considerable sales tax and traffic from surrounding communities. If it was something that was going to draw people here and be a shot in the arm financially, I would sacrifice the neighborhood, Dawson said, but I'm not going to for a grocery store that's already here. Council members Chris Funk, Dana Ray, and Bill Faber did not take a position, saying they would wait to hear from residents, Aldi representatives, and city staff at the meeting. Faber said he would also consider the effect of the decision on future generations. The Indian chiefs of the Sioux and Navajo, they used to say when the chief counseled to make its decision, they need to project 200 years into the future. Seven generations on, so must be considered when any decision is being made in the community, said. And sometimes we don't always do that. Councilwoman Lisa Gregory could not be reached for comment. City Manager Tim Gleason said he did not know what the outcome of the vote would be, but that said the city would likely to continue to receive inquiries from developers if Aldi does not locate there. There is an interest in the corridor on the west side. That's not suggesting the answer would change, but if it's no from the city elected, if it is a no from the city elected, he said, but I don't think it's going to be uncommon for us to have these requests from potential development. It's a very desirable location. End of the article. Another's editor's pick. This one's by Chris Lusvardi, again, for the Herald and Review. 2017 Farm Progress. Plans begin. Decatur. After a successful Farm Progress show this summer, attention has shifted to preparing Progress City USA for the next show a little less than 2 years. The site is still being cleaned up from the show, Greg Florian said. Tuesday during the Brush College LLC meeting following the regular Richland Community College board meeting. The show came off unbelievably well, said Florian, Richland's vice president of finance and administration. Tent equipment is still being hauled out. Richland was able to make a profit from hosting the Craig Morton concert the second evening of the show, Florian said. Farm Progress made a tremendous impact on the community, he said. Funding is needed for road repairs and finishing the area that was expanded this year. Work on the expanded area is complete for now, with the roads remaining gravel and Van Horn, Inc. donating 2,000 pounds of grass seed, Florian said. If we ever get any rain, we might have grass out there, he said. The college's overall financial situation remains dependent on the state budget being resolved, Florian said. It has received all its fiscal year 2015 money from the state, he said. We don't have anything this year, Florian said. The lack of funding remains most visible as weeds are growing in the Student Success Center construction site rather than work being completed, Richland President Gail Saunders said. She is still hoping the center can open in 2016, but the summer and fall enrollment process will be done at a different location. During the Richland meeting, the board heard a report about the college's involvement in the Illinois Network of Advanced Manufacturing. The college received a $525,000 grant in 2012 that has been used to develop its manufacturing training program, said Jack Adwell, Richland Business Technology Dean, who is retiring at the end of November. Of that money, Adwell said, $487,000 was used for classroom equipment and $22,000 for supplies, with the rest covering odds and ends. We will continue to build on this, Adwell said. The board's next meeting will be held November 17th at Meriden High School to gather input from community members. Saunders said the meeting will start at 5 p.m. on November 17th, followed by an outreach activity at 5:30 and the meeting at 6:15. End of that article. Continuing with the news. An AP out of Springfield, Illinois State Museum may lose accreditation due to closure. The Illinois State Museum system is in danger of losing its national accreditation after Governor Bruce Rauner closed the museums due to the state budget impasse. The American Alliance of Museums Accreditation Commission voted 7-0 on Monday to put the museum system on probation. Accreditation Commission Chairman Bert Logan says there are grave concerns about the impact of the closure on the museum's long-term viability. The Illinois State Museum system has had accreditation from the Arlington-based Alliance since 1972. The group recognizes museums that meet certain criteria for collection, staff, financial stability, and other areas. The Republican governor said he closed the Springfield Museum and four satellite sites as part of his effort to manage state finance while he and Democrat-led legislature are deadlocked over the state budget. End of that article. Next, there's an app for that now. DeKalb, Illinois. Derek Johnson had an idea for a mobile app that would help people who suffer from dementia but never had the opportunity to learn how to put it in action. Northern Illinois University hosted its first ever hackathon. About 200 tech junkies from age 11 to 50 gathered at Holmes Student Center and spent 24 hours working to create innovative apps, computer programs, and websites with the aim at solving community challenges. Organizations like hospitals, nonprofits, and governmental institutions submitted challenges that addressed a wide variety of needs. Some were specific. Create a how-to app for new volunteers at the DeKalb County Community Gardens, for example. Some were a bit broader. Design a better system for caring for the geriatric population. Now that's broad. The three-person team of high schoolers that took on the broad challenge took third place in the competition with their app, Wander. We worked on a program to help older people who were diagnosed with dementia, Johnson said. All three of us have relatives that suffer from dementia, so that's where we got the idea. The app's design integrates GPS tracking and health data to allow family and caretakers to know if a loved one has left specific areas, Johnson said. Well, the idea seemed straightforward enough. It was a bit more complicated than anticipated. It was hard, but we learned quite a bit from it, Johnson said. This was a lot of stuff I'd never even gotten close to doing. A lot of app development, GPS location, stuff like that. Tracy Rogers Tybee, research associate with NIU's Center for Governmental Studies, said the idea for the event blossomed from brainstorming ways to get the students more connected with technology resources available on campus. This whole culture of student hackathons is relatively new, she said. Participants are using and writing code, making things for the common good. Our theme was based around community challenges because our broadband network is connected to community institutions like hospitals, schools, and government offices. The hackathon drew attendance from across the nation and one participant from Canada. In class, you do the projects. They tell you how to do the projects. You learn what they are teaching you, John Eichenoffer said. Let's try this again. In class, you do the projects. They tell you how to do the projects. You learn what they're teaching you, Joe Eichenhofer, a computing engineer major at the University of Wisconsin, said. Here, you learn whatever you want to learn. You implement the project the way you want to. Eichenhofer and his team put together a website to show degrees of separation between Twitter users, to show how ordinary users were linked to suspicious accounts or users like Edward Snowden and WikiLeaks. Austin Hartsheim, teammate, computer science major, and fellow University of Wisconsin-Madison student, said events like these help him build a portfolio to set him apart as he heads into his job hunt. This project takes on privacy and security and develops programming, he said. So I definitely see it tying into my future career. End of the article. Continuing with the news, DMH SIU to increase health care. This is by Donette Beckett of the H&R staff. Decatur. Decatur Memorial Hospital and the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine on Tuesday announced a collaboration to expand medical services. The expansion of specialties offered at surrounding hospitals is aimed at allowing patients to stay in Decatur. Dr. John Flack, chairman of the SIU Department of Internal Medicine, said specialty services offered at Decatur Memorial will begin after the first of the year. This is going to be a place not only for clinical care, but also teaching and training all levels, he said. Services will begin with gastroenterology and dermatology. The collaboration eventually will bring specialties such as neurology and pediatric cardiology to the hospital. Our goal is to make it unnecessary for citizens of Decatur and Macon County to have to travel outside of the community for that care, said Timothy Stone, Jr., Decatur Memorial president. About 15% of the Springfield area's internal medicine patients currently travel from Decatur. Services being sought there include infectious diseases, endocrinology, neurology, and various surgeries. Flack said SIU views the expansion of services for Decatur patients, quote as being very much in line with our mission, serving the people of Central and Southern Illinois, unquote. Decatur Memorial has had a working relationship with the medical school for 35 years. The two establishments have the same mission for patients, quote, delivering care and managing the wellness to the community, unquote, said John Locke, president of Decatur's hospital medical staff. The SIU School of Medicine covers 65 counties in Illinois, focusing on clinical and academic activities. With the Decatur Memorial Partnership, patients and students will have access to specialized services, officials said. Quote, we will both fulfill our missions, unquote, said Dr. Jerry Cruz, SIU Healthcare Executive Associate Dean. The goal for DMH is to provide more doctors and specialists for patients in the Decatur area, Stone said. For example, Stone indicated Decatur has 3 gastroenterologists who have all the business they can handle. The process of the collaboration is moving like wildfire, Cruz said. At the same time, we will do it in a good, orderly progression. End of the article. Continuing, legislator Martino wins auditor post. Martino, out of Springfield by Kurt Erickson, who is the Lee Springfield Bureau Chief. Springfield, Illinois lawmakers confirmed State Representative Frank Martino is Illinois' next Auditor General Tuesday. On a unanimous vote in the Senate and a 102-10 vote in the House, the Spring Valley Democrat was endorsed to become the state's third Auditor General. He will replace the retiring William Holland, who has served in the $154,000 per year post since 1992. I promise I will take on the legacy of Bill Holland. I want to thank you for the confidence you have in me, Martino told members of the House after his confirmation. Martino, 53, ascended to the 10-year post after he won an early endorsement from House Speaker Michael Madigan. Madigan said Martino's service as co-chairman of the Audit Commission gave him the experience to oversee the office. 14 people applied for the job, including finalist Larry Sanders, a Marion attorney, and State Representative Elaine Neckritz, Democrat, out of Northbrook. Applicants came from as far away as North Carolina and California. They all had strengths that were very impressive, State Representative David Reese, Republican Willow Hill, said of the candidate pool. Martino, however, has 25 years in the House under 4 governors. In addition, he served as co-chairman of the Legislative Audit Commission, which reviewed more than 2,000 audits during his tenure. We'll all be well served by Mr. Martino's leadership and guidance, said State Senator Jason Berrickman, a Bloomington Republican, who has served as co-chairman of the Audit Committee along with Martino. His qualities as a human being are without equal, said State Representative John Bradley, Democrat, Marion. So that's the end of that article. It is the end of part one of our reading of Decatur papers for Wednesday, October 21st, 2015. This is Debbie saying, talk to you again soon.